Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
Those of you listening to the show know I have a tremendous bias against going back to school. Despite having a PhD from Berkeley and teaching at three universities, including Berkeley, maybe even because of that, I've been a consultant to 15 college presidents. I've come to the conclusion that for most people, the time and money of going back to school is usually, it could be better spent. But, you know, indeed, it is a dominant view that it is a good idea. So I thought this would be a good time to, especially now, this is the time when people are applying to schools and thinking about it. And maybe if some schools that aren't very selective, you can apply for now and you can start, you know, as soon as the Christmas holiday is over. I thought this would be a good time to do one of my efforts at fairness. As those of you know, listen to the show, I'm obsessed with this idea that, you know, we live in a Bay Area echo chamber, and too much of the media is just giving one voice. So one of the ways I try to put a little bit of a halter on my own tendency to do that is to do what I call switch sides in the middle debate. So I've asked my usual co-conspirator here, unindicted, Barbara Nimco, Barbara Nimco, to be my conversation partner, debater, whatever you want to call, regarding this issue of should you go back to school. And of course, it depends on the individual, and so we'll try to individualize later. But enough of that. Let me simply start by introducing. I need to do this first. I need to acknowledge a little of my biases first. I tweet like a maniac because the older I get, the more I realize that I really think that short is the most likely to influence. People are more likely to be influenced by a bumper sticker than all the tomes. So here are a few of my recent tweets on higher education, and then I will try to be neutral and introduce Barbara. Jonathan Y., who's a PhD education researcher at Duke, he tweets too, and he wrote a tweet that says, "What happens when everyone goes to college?" This is not a funny riddle. What happens when everyone goes to college? Quote, "It's just an extension of high school." It's true. The colleges have dumbed down massively. And that's something you need to keep in mind as you're going back to school. You are going to have a very diverse, I don't mean racially diverse, I mean intellectually and preparedly diverse group of folks, which does take a toll, not on the brand name of the degree or the piece of paper, but in terms of how much you're going to learn. It is really hard to teach a very wide range of students in the same class. My next tweet. "Sad that so many graduates of designer label colleges and grad schools feel that the major benefit of all the time and money is the networking." A number of studies have found that. Next tweet. "Sad that most top students choose a college based on prestige, which that prestige is based on research, the research that the professors do, and inversely correlated with the quality of education provided." Two more, and then I'll introduce Barbara. "From 1975 to 2008, the number of full-time faculty in Cal State universities has stayed essentially flat, while the number of administrators in the same period has gone from 3,800 to over 12,000. We're paying for administrators to administrate a variety of programs that have minimal impact on how students learn. And the final, one of my biased tweets but strongly held views. We all have biases, but these are my really carefully considered perspectives over a lifetime. "We push all to college and graduate school. So we have more talkers, protesters, marketers, journalists, PR, lawyers, teachers, but we have fewer doers, the people who create and fix." All right, end of unvarnishedly biased, and now we start with the debate. Dr. Barbara Nimco is particularly well qualified to be involved in a debate about going back to school because she is a leader in vocational education nationally in her role as superintendent of schools in Napa County, and she's also an expert in education technology, and she's also had a hell of a lot of education herself, so she certainly couldn't be biased against education from that perspective. She's got a PhD from Berkeley as well. Dr. Barbara Nimco, welcome as usual.
And a very good morning to you.
Oh, that's so polite and perky. Okay, so what we do, for those of you who are not familiar with our switch sides in the middle debate, in an attempt to ensure fairness, and I really will now, we're trying to be extremely as fair as I can. During the first half of the debate, I make the argument for one side. In this case, I'm going to start by demonstrating how fair I can be. I'm going to make all the best arguments I can for being in favor of going back to school. And Barbara will make all the arguments why that's a bad idea and why there are better alternatives to that. And then we will switch sides. And I will make she will make the argument for why it's a great idea to go back to school, and I'll make the argument for why it's a terrible idea. And then, my dear listeners, are not going to be figuring who's the winner of the debate because we both took both sides, but hopefully you will have explored the issue in full dimension rather than the biased approach that I really do think the media is very, very, very guilty of. So, sound good, Barbara? Anything you want to add before we start?
Sounds great.
Okay, so I'm going to start now. I'm going to be a big advocate for going back to school. First of all, the reality is that most employers rely on degrees, or certificates at least, as one of their initial screening tools. And the more degrees you have, the better. And reality is that most people who are going back to school, remember that's our topic today, most people do it because they want to enhance their career. And for darn sure, most employers, including the government, which is an enormous employer, they're the largest employer in America, they are very degree-centric, and most of the big corporations, because they get thousands of applications, and they don't want to be seen as racist. So they go and they use a very colorblind criterion like, do you have a degree? And because of affirmative action in college admissions, they're going to be more likely to get a robust percentage of minorities. So employers are going to want you if you got a degree, and that's a hell of a reason to go back for the degree. Because whatever the cost of the degree is, especially if you start at community college or go to community college, your costs are going to be smaller than the enormous employability benefit you're going to derive. A big plus of going back to school is your professors, some of them, if you focus on taking practical courses, a number of your professors and your classmates can be sources of job leads. 3, you can learn stuff. And if you're careful in picking your program, and again, not relying on prestige, which usually means a bunch of theory with very little practicality, you're going to gain valuable career skills. That counts. You can't look on averages, and the averages show how little students learn that's of practical value. But if you're very careful in choosing your program, choosing your professors, you can learn a lot of practical value. Next, if you enjoy the social aspect of school, you have that. Many people love the idea of learning with others and talking with others and flirting with others. That's fine. That's perfectly legitimate. And if you don't, you can take an online degree or a course. Let's say you're a parent or you're a homebound person because of a disability or whatever. There's a zillion courses at Coursera and edX and Udemy and all the rest of them where you can take courses. And the Coursera ones are university taught at some of the most prestigious universities you could never get into at Harvard and Berkeley and Stanford. Then there are so many options, as I was just implying. The in-person options, there's 35 colleges here in the Bay Area alone. And all of them have returning adults programs to make it easier for adults. And, of course, a zillion online ones I just mentioned. And the online ones are self-paced. And older workers, people going back to school, normally do learn slower, remember less. And these online self-paced programs can be particularly good for you. And they're free or very low cost. And my guest next week is going to be talking about boot camps, which is a way in a couple of weeks and a couple of $1,000s you can gain this much vaunted computer programming skills. And finally, in terms of low cost, the community colleges. They are very practically oriented. They don't focus on research, and their cost is zero or next to zero. And finally, let us not ignore the fact that many people, including me, love learning for learning's sake. And not me, but many people love it in a group. So there's a hell of a lot of reasons for why you should go back to school, and that's my best shot at making the pro argument. Now, Barbara Nemco, would you make the negative arguments?
I would be delighted to.
Good.
We tend to live in the world of the past. And in the world of the past, it was critical that you have a degree in order to get a job. A lot of employers use that as the minimum criteria. But at a conference last year with lots of employers, I was quite surprised and quite delighted to hear most of them saying, you know, we used to think it was about the degrees. What we care about now is what can you do? And I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the air, but this is a quote. What they said is, we want people who can do shit. That's
you can't say
said.
That.
That's what they said. So it's a quote. I didn't say it. I'm just telling you what employers said.
Wow.
And they said it again and again,
wow,
that now what they're looking for is the person who has specific skills that fit what they need. They don't care whether you have a degree or not. What can you do for them? And if you think about it, it makes perfect sense, because in an era where a much smaller percentage of people had degrees, having a degree was a big deal. It meant you had perseverance and responsibility and stick-to-itiveness and all of that. In today, where so many people have degrees because we've pushed everybody to college, then it doesn't mean as much. It doesn't tell you anything about what the person can do. It just means that they were persistent enough to sit through all their classes. So other reasons why I don't think it's important. Most of what goes on in college classes has to do with the professor's particular interest, theories, particular bias, and his or her research. None of that has anything to do with what you're going to do on the job. So there's lots and lots of theory that you have to sit through. And all of this time and money is being spent for you to get stuff that you don't need that really won't help you get the job. So the first thing I think people ought to do is to talk to the people who are in charge of the jobs that they want to get and ask them, is it really a degree that you want, or are there specific skills that you want? And if the answer is yes, it is the degree, fine. It also depends. It's kind of like a restaurant. Is a restaurant better than home cooking? It depends on who the chef is in both places. So, for example, if you go to Napa Valley College and you go to the police academy, then their stats are fabulous for the number of people who get jobs out of their particular program, because it is on the cutting edge of the kind of training in community policing that police departments are looking for now. But that doesn't mean that if you go to some other community college, it's going to be equally good. So you have to do your homework and find out what the stats are for this college, what percentage of their graduates get jobs in the fields that they were studying, and at what kind of salaries. Otherwise, you could be throwing your money away. The other thing is, there are so many ways to learn things today. You can go online, there are MOOCs, there are online courses, there are credit courses, non-credit courses, so you can determine exactly what you want to learn, and you can personalize it to you and your situation, rather than walking in and having it personalized to the instructor and what he or she thinks might be interesting, important, or give a chance to show off their expertise. So those, and then of course, if you're taking classes, then you have to worry about writing papers and taking tests and getting a grade, and all of this takes up way more time than the time you would spend if you were merely trying to learn the skills that you need to get the job.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's let our listeners know you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We are doing what we is a core value of this show, which is we really believe the media abdicates its responsibility to be fairness by having this echo chamber where only people, they make arguments for what they believe in, and then they get a straw man to present straw man opposition, and that does not serve humankind. It leads to polarization. So we're using what we call the switch sides in the middle debate, where I make the very best arguments I can for one side, and Barbara makes the best arguments on the other, and then we switch in the middle so that we can equate for the quality of the debaters, so that you, my dear listeners, in a true democracy, you are exposed to the full range of benevolently derived ideas, and you, not the media, can make the choice of what is wisdom. And with the topic we're doing that today on is, should you go back to school? And of course, it's on an individual basis. And after we finish our debate, I'm going to focus on individualizing for whom it's a better idea and who it's not, because it's all about nuance. Debates have a disadvantage in having, you know, a winner and a loser, and one side it's binary. And of course, things are more nuanced than that. But for now, to flesh out the arguments, we're in the middle of this debate. And now we're in the middle of the debate, I'm going to switch sides. And I'm going to make all the best arguments I can. Barbara, why don't you make all the arguments now for why you think it is a good idea for many adults to go back to school, not just for a course online, but for a degree or at least a six-course certificate or something like that, okay?
Okay, well, I'm happy to say that vocational education is making a resurgence in this country, and that's largely because it's hard to ignore the fact that you have all of these thousands of college graduates with degrees who can't get jobs. So the advice that everybody has to go to college is no longer just taking liberal arts. People are now looking at what kind of degrees do you need if you want to get a job. So they are tailoring lots of career pathway programs. The state of California has given us money to set up career pathways in high school, in colleges, by regions, depending on what the labor market says. So these programs are being tailored to helping students get jobs. When you enroll in a college program, that now gives you an enormous network of people. You have a network of faculty people, you have a network of students, but you also have a network of employers, because in order to get courses approved in the vocational area, you have to show that you've got an advisory committee made up of actual employers who will hire people, and they're informing the instructors on what are the most important skills that need to be taught. So that network can be incredibly helpful to you. You also, for many people, going online is not a great way to learn. It requires a lot of self-discipline. You know, when you're sitting in your house and you're on the computer, it's so easy to get distracted by everything from the laundry needs doing, the baby is crying, or you just look around, it's a beautiful day outside, and why do you want to sit here? You'll come back and do it later, and then you never do. If you're enrolled in a course, you know exactly when you have to be there, and you stay there, and you kind of force yourself to learn this stuff. And you have to, because you probably have to write a paper or take an exam. So they're making sure that you really are learning what you're supposed to be doing. And for all of us, the social part of going to school is delightful. It's another way to meet people who have a similar interest. You want to meet somebody as a romantic partner, you go online, you don't know what you're getting. But in a class, you know that these are all people with similar interests, and then you have the opportunity to experience the chemistry in person rather than trying to guess what it would be like, and then you could have a great flirtation online, and you meet the person, and you're thinking, what was I thinking? And when you're in school today, it isn't all necessarily having to be done on campus. There are all these blended programs, and you can be on campus for part of the time, and you can be doing part of it at home. So it gives you a wide variety of options to choose from. And at community colleges, they're pretty low cost, so that is not going to give you a whole lot of debt that you have to deal with, but may give you the network, the skills, the specifics to be able to get a great job.
Okay. I mean, the essence of that argument, you eviscerate in many ways the arguments against going to school by focusing on the community college because of the low cost and their practicality, whereas
right.
the research university, it's so absurd, a Martian wouldn't believe it. You know, the more prestigious the university, the less likely it's to be practical. You know, Harvard is going to be more theoretical and abstract and not practical in the real world than Golden Gate University.
Right.
And that's true even at the graduate level as well. But now I'm going to make all the best arguments I can for why generically going back to school is a bad idea.
Okay, fine. I dare you.
Okay.
No, right. Since I just made those arguments 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, well, sure. We're trying to be, that's what this fairness thing is about.
It is pretty.
I did the best job I could of arguing why it's a good idea. Now I'm going to do the best job I can why I'm against.
Go for it.
You are more likely to learn more that is relevant for free through a self-designed program, or maybe with some mentor who's a person you'd love to work for or whatever, with a self-designed program of reading, watching YouTube videos, apprenticing, a boot camp for a week or two, online, individual courses, Udemy courses, or it can be just a couple of hours and you learn a tremendous amount. I really believe that are the amount that any human being, definitely including me, has to share with somebody on a given topic decreases with every extra minute. So if you've got me for an hour, you're going to get my best in 1 hour. You get me for a whole semester, sure, I'm going to give you more, but it's much more concentrated away from the course. The course is highly inefficient. The Parkinson's law says that work expands to fill the time allotted. Well, if you get given a whole semester, you're going to fill it, but it may not be the most time effective thing. Also, arguing against going back to school, as we've been saying, even if you're careful in selecting a program, professors by definition are people who've opted out of the real world to be theoreticians. Yes, there's the occasional practical professor they feel they better stick in there in order to maintain some relevance, but it's certainly a significant percentage of professors are really people with very little real-world experience. I'll never forget, I had this guy who had a liberal arts degree from Penn, bright guy, definitely a bright guy, who couldn't get a job except as selling used pianos at Colton Piano Company. And he was my career counseling client, and I decide, you know, because he does school so well, he's going to get a PhD in business, not an MBA. He wanted a PhD because he liked the idea of teaching. This is a guy with no business experience other than selling a few used pianos. Gets a PhD from business, and a few years later, he contacts me and says, he is a professor at Temple University. I may be wrong about the university. With no experience, and he's a professor of business. This is the person, the best qualified person to be teaching people about business, when his PhD was filled with theoretical, abstract, qualitative, and quantitative models with very little relevance to the real world, and even their case studies are usually completely irrelevant, either because they're old or because they represent only the biggest companies. So what made Walmart succeed and now fail is very little relevance to what you, as starting out as an entrepreneur or working for a company, has to do. Also, even if you're taking just one course, forget about a whole degree, you're being taught masses of information, most of which you'll have little opportunity to apply. So you're going to forget it by the time you need it, or it's going to be obsolete by then. But if you do just-in-time learning, for example, you Google to find the answer to your immediate problem at work, you have guaranteed immediate applicability of your learning and free. And if you document all your self-learning in a little Microsoft Word file, and then you're applying for a new job, and you say, look what I learned on the fly on a just-in-time as-needed practical basis. Here was the boot camp I went to. Here was the one-time course I went to. Here was the mentorship I did. Here were the conversations with eminence I did. You're more likely to actually be hireable, unless it's a stupid, you know, frankly, a corporate or government rigid standard. You've got to have a degree. But if there's any openness at all, if the boss has any brain and is not just slavishly following the rules, seeing your dossier of all that learning that you did outside of the academic structure would make him or her more likely to hire you. And also, when you're a student, you are feeling disempowered. You're terrified that you're not going to understand what the professor's saying, and even if it's irrelevant, you're not thinking that way. And you got to study for the midterm and the final, and like you were saying, and then the term papers. And you are in a subservient role. To use the feminist term, you are denied agency. You are a marionette controlled by this academic person. If you are a self-learner, if you're choosing what boot camps, what courses, what mentorships, what reading, whatever, what YouTube videos, that's empowering. That increases your agency. And then finally, anxiety. Grading makes people anxious. You're anxious that you procrastinate. Heaven forbid you should want to have sex on a Sunday morning instead of studying. You're feeling guilty. If you're not reading all 400 pages of that abstruse book, you're feeling guilty. And you're afraid of getting the low grade. And if you fail, that can be devastating in terms of your transcript, which your employer may read, and certainly to your self-esteem. And so that's why I believe that going back to schools is net a very negative idea. Now, let's leave that, Barbara. That's the best I've got. And now let's take away, because debate has an advantage in that it forces us to make best arguments, but has a disadvantage in that it forces us to be polarized. So now let us put our statesman and stateswoman hat on. And in light of all the arguments, what does the wise woman within you, the goddess within you, think is the most nuanced statement you can make about the wisdom of who and when and whether to go back to school?
Ooh, the goddess says, do your homework. Do your homework means, number one, for the specific job that you want, talk to employers and find out whether or not the degree is what the most important thing that they're looking for. As you said wisely, if it's a government job, they may still have those kinds of rules.
Absolutely.
And therefore, if that's the job that you're looking for, then it's real easy. You do need to go back to school. But if it's in the private sector, you've got to talk to employers, because many of them are going to tell you what the employers were saying at the conference that I went to. And it wasn't that I heard it one time and was shocked. I heard it throughout the conference from panel after panel of employers that this is a new era that we're in.
I want to be fair. I want to make sure that I'm fair to government here, because I know people are sensitive to that. There are, on most government job descriptions, there is an allowance for an acceptance. It always says degree required, and then it says, or the equivalence. Now, it's much harder to prove the equivalence, but even government is not quite as black and white rigid as I was implying. I want to make sure I was fair. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Then the other part of your homework is for the job that you want and the college that you're thinking of going, find out what percentage of people actually get hired for jobs in that field.
Yep.
Because colleges have always been very remiss in making that data readily available.
Absolutely.
To you. You're going to have to do a little probing. But you are entitled to that information, because a college that's claiming that they're going to prepare you to get a job as an art historian, for example, well, how many people actually get jobs as art historians?
Or journalists.
Whatever it is that you're looking for.
Yep.
So that's why I use the Napa Valley College Police Academy example.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a college that really has this excellent track record, again, you know that would be the program that you do want to sign up for. If you're looking for different kinds of jobs, and you've got to do your research and find out exactly what experience, background, and skills do they want, and then figure out where to get them. So it's a very individual approach to how you can best prepare yourself for the job that you want.
Now, I want to be fair again, this time to the universities. It's difficult to get valid data on employability. Some people just don't, they're sick of school, they don't want to go back to work. Some of them will, you know, it's understandable when people make a choice to be a public policy major. You know, it's well aware there's only a relatively small percentage of people who get a job in public policy, but they care so much about the field. So employability isn't the only thing, and they may not have good data. But I would recommend that you go really more to the career center and not to the admissions people. Admissions people are in the business of bringing in people. You know,
they're selling.
So I'd be more likely to be talking. My favorite strategy is to sit in on an advanced class in the program that you'd want to be attending. And then during the break or at the end of the class, ask students, because they know what the recent graduates, because they're the ones who are really eager to, you know, they're almost finished with the program, they're either getting jobs now or they've certainly heard what this class ahead of them have done. You can get the most valid subjective estimate. It's not going to be perfect, but you'll get a good feel for whether all you really want is there reasonable viability for getting a job given this degree. If I am going to major in nonprofit management, I'm trying to pick Bay Area-centric examples. If I want to major in nonprofit management and I sit in an advanced class, let's say the master's degree seminar that they usually have before you write your master's thesis or project, and the student's saying, oh, yeah, we know a lot of students who are getting jobs that are at least somewhat policy-related, that's good enough. You know, we don't perfect. There's too many reasons you don't. But does that make sense, Barb?
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. I would add to that, if they're telling you that students are really getting jobs, where are they getting the jobs? And then I would go talk to the people at the place where they're getting these jobs, because the question is, would you be more likely to hire somebody because they come out of this program and they have this degree, or are you more likely to promote somebody from within who's been working for you? Is that a different strategy of getting the job?
Another example of how fuzzy the data is, I remember it was a law school back east, prestigious, when I remember it was Boston University or something like that. It wasn't Harvard or anything, but it was like second tier, but relatively prestigious, had cited, when they sent their results into U.S. News for rankings, they said that, you know, some huge percentage, like 95% of our graduates were employed. They didn't say that what ended up happening was they got them 1 week employment. In order to boost their statistics up, because they wanted to boost their U.S. news ranks. And here again, trying to be really fair, I think it was Nancy Pelosi or somebody, or Barbara Boxer. It was Barbara Boxer who started an investigation into those universities for this, using, you know, sleazy tactics to distort their statistics.
Wow.
So yeah, you remember, higher education is a business. Or, you know, whether, even if it's a for-profit, like I said at the top of the show, Cal State University's number of professors has stayed flat over in like the 13, in the 18-year period between 1975, not 18, 28-year period, 23-year old period, 33 period between 1975 and 2008. But the number of administrators went up from 3,800 to 12,000. It's a business. It's a self-perpetuating. Everybody wants their jobs, so they're all, and it's all about in part about enrollment. You know, I have a number of clients who work as higher ed administrators, and the number one, let me tell this story. It's a good story. This is a student who was in an art, this is in an art college. It is a private San Francisco art college, and the student refused to put away his cell phone during class. And the instructor kept telling him, put it away, and he would put it away and take it out again in 2 minutes. Finally, another day, maybe a week or two later, the kid comes up to the professor before class, in front of the class. The class was just beginning to assemble. And the kid says, you don't really like me, do you? And the professor got really annoyed because he saw this, the way the student was behaving. He said, you know, to be honest, I don't. And I really think you should drop this class. And you know what happened? The administrators made him apologize to the student. Because, quote, the student is a tuition-paying student. Standards are irrelevant. They're businesses. It's about making the money, like every other business. And I've heard that many times. So, yes, I've also heard, again, trying to be fair, there are many people who say they loved going back to school. It was one of the most enriching things in their lives, personally and professionally. So it is, your analogy is right about the chef in the restaurant. We've all had wonderful experiences in a restaurant, and we've had crappy ones. It depends on who's doing the cooking, who's doing the serving, and that metaphor is probably right, because the server is the one who's serving up your education. Do talk to the students. Do talk to the consumers. Look on the websites. There are websites that rate colleges and describe them narratively, not just in terms of numerical averages, which can be misleading. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Excellent advice.
But I want to, again, inbound, because it is new. Now I want to turn, because it's not, is going back to school good or bad? I want to make some arguments about for whom it's better and worse, and then I want you to feel free to interrupt as you will, or wait till I finish, whichever moves you, to discuss that, again, more nuanced answer to the question of going back to school. There are even some people as young as 30 that worry they're too old to go back to school or graduate school, not just college. They may be afraid they won't fit in socially. They may be afraid they will have forgotten too much of what they had previously learned when they were in college. Or they'll learn too slowly or they'll forget too quickly. And so let's take each of those issues. The question, will I fit in socially? There are a lot of people who want to return to school, like you said, in part because they like the school social aspect. But they remember when they themselves were a younger student, they were thinking, oh, those old people, it's weird for them to be students. But the truth is today, an older student is less likely to be what they call today a unicorn. In part, that is because good jobs are harder to land. So more older people are returning to school in hopes of increasing their hireability. Now, here's some advice. If you're going to do that, if you are over 25 or over 30, let alone over 50, it's a mistake to try to act like a 20-year-old. You go and you try to use some young person's jargon or dress like a teeny bopper or you show off your knowledge of pop culture. That's transparent. Most of the younger students like to think that's pathetic. It's usually wiser to use your age as a strength. Like in class discussions, you might bring up an experience that a younger student might not have had yet, like maybe because you've been in the workplace or with your child or your grandchild. But also, certainly, do think twice before lording your age over younger students. For example, I've been around the block a little longer than you have. Not only is that a fast way to alienate them, it's hubristic. You've only seen, no matter how old you are, you've only seen a thin slice of the world, so keep that to yourself. And finally, during breaks or after class, you might ask younger people about what the younger people are in a better position to discuss than you are. You know, maybe you're going to ask them about pop culture or hip technologies or young people's social mores or like the microaggressions thing, the new standards for what constitutes rape on campus. Then you might be seen as, you know, relevant, interested in them, without being superior. Then there's the question of, will you be able to learn fast enough? It's a dirty secret. We don't like to talk about it, but it's the truth. It's unfortunate that many older students have more difficulty learning and retaining material. But the good news is that many older students can compensate, at least in part by being unusually dedicated to studying, which they are. Remember when you were a young student, you said, oh boy, that old student, they were always so prepared and everything. Well, there's your compensation. Partly it's driven by fear. They're afraid because they're older that they're not going to remember or not learn as well, so they use that fear to drive them to work harder at it. The other thing is, you know, you may be wise, if you are an older student, to take fewer courses per semester. And that's another reason not to go into a degree program where they're going to make you take more than one course. You might just take one course just to get your sea legs. And at critical, and we've both been implying this throughout, choose courses and professors who are known to be excellent teachers and who don't pile on undue amounts of work. There is this, I can't use the word, peeing contest, that I can say, peeing contests among professors to show who's the most rigorous at your expense, even if the rigor is unnecessary rigor, right? Often the same course that's taught by two different professors can vary greatly in demands and greatly in practicality. And there are a ton of resources to help you pick professors. Online, there are I think it's called professorreview.com or a bunch of, just Google professor review websites, you'll find there's a bunch of them. And then do, as an older person, consider taking online classes, because it is correct that the average completion rate of online classes is very low, but being older, you're more motivated than the average youngest person, and being self-paced, again, is a real good advantage for older students, because if you do need to go over it slowly, you can, without feeling guilty and, you know, feeling like you're falling behind. And of course, online classes have the advantages of being flexible to accommodate to older people's lives, your family responsibilities, your disabilities or whatever, and you're not having to deal with the crazy commute. There's, you know, it, you know, not most colleges are not near mass transit, and so you got to drive, and you're sitting in gridlock because of our Bay Area policies, no freeways. So we've got a 30% increase in population in the last 20 years or 30 years, and no increase in freeways. So, I'll stop with that. Now, you also really you need to think a little more consciously, if you're older, about which learning enhancements might work for you. Like, you've got the experience of when you were younger. Were flashcards helpful to you? Were study groups helpful to you? Were reading aloud the material in the textbook useful to you? Was reading a paragraph to yourself and then paraphrasing it aloud, looking away from the text and paraphrase? You've got the benefit of the experience to know what works for you and use more of that, and that can compensate for whatever learning speed decrements you might have. And then, of course, self-discipline. It's an issue for everybody. You know, there is no one-size strategy for dealing with procrastination and inefficiency, but might one of these work for you? You know, like you tend to not miss a doctor's appointment. You've got it in your calendar, you're going to go. Same thing with study times. Block those out, saying, okay, every day from 9 to 10 while I'm fresh, or when I come home just from work, before I eat dinner and I'm going to then get food coma, I'm going to, for 1 hour, I'm going to study. Make it, don't kill yourself with the studying. Make it relatively constrained and decide you can't read everything. Most professors, as I said, have peeing contests to how much they can assign. Figure out what you really need to read. And I am not an opponent, for example, of using Spark Notes. That's the modern day equivalent of Cliff Notes. You can learn, they're written by Harvard-level people, and they're really excellent summaries and a good way, especially if the knowledge is not that critical to you. It's a great way to be prepared for the exams and whatever, and at no cost, essentially. Spark Notes are free, or I think they are free. Set aside a quiet room. And if you don't have a quiet room in your apartment or your house, you know, and these days, ever more people are living with roommates. You know, they don't have their nice little private place like we used to say in the old days. You know, it used to be that people's aspiration was to own a home. Then it was to afford an apartment. Now it's to have an apartment with roommates. So you may not have a quiet room. Well, there are libraries. There are community rooms. There's coffee shops that might work for you. And finally, time tactics. There are some people who set a timer for 1 hour. And they say, that's it. If I get the hour done, I'm done. And maybe give myself a reward or whatever. And then there's the Pomodoro technique, which I love. It's named after those tomato-shaped kitchen timers. You set it for 20 minutes, you work for the 20, and then you take a 5-minute break. Work for another 20 minutes, take a 5-minute break. Another 20, and then a 10-minute break. Love the Pomodoro technique. It's worked for a number of my clients. And ask questions. Asking questions in and outside of class is your way to get individualized instruction, that just-in-time learning that you care about. And if you're worried that your question is going to sound stupid, then go and ask the question in an email or during office hours. That's the personalized instruction you're paying for. Also, there's a way to get, if you're taking a degree program, many universities, especially the privates, because they're so tuition-driven, they will give you credit for your life experience, and that's what older adults have that younger students don't. If you can look at the courses that are required, if you can figure out a way to demonstrate that you've acquired real-world knowledge that's equivalent to what that course would be, even if it's not exactly the same, if it's parallel, you can often petition to get course credit for it, and that way it doesn't cost you anything, and that's great. So those are my best thoughts on who should go back to school, and most importantly, what I really focused on here, is how to make the most of it as an older student. Barbara Nemco, what are your reactions and additions, subtractions, amplifications?
I think those are all very important and critical points. I would be interested now in hearing from our listeners
yes.
what they think.
Yeah, I want to hear a little more from you. Yes,
we're going to do that. We've kind of belabored it for 40 minutes now. Let's get
love it.
People's personal ideas.
Love it. Absolutely love it. I'm going to give out the phone number. Barbara, as usual, is right. We've tried our best to give best made arguments for whether it's wise in general to go back to school for college or graduate degree, whom it's better for, and how to make the most of it. That's why we use the Switch Sides debate to ensure, Mac, do our best we can to give full, fair credit to both sides of the argument. But yes, love to hear what your thoughts are in light of this discussion, whether it's a comment on the idea of going back to school or your personal goal, you know, your personal situation, because this is all still generic. If you're thinking about getting more education, more training, not sure how to do it, we'll have a question for Barbara or me, we certainly welcome your call. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's the number here at KALW, 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls to come in, Barb, do you... let's, you know, press reset for a moment, and let's say I was your brother or sister, and I was saying, I am going to go back to school. What would be the one piece of advice? And let's say I picked the program, because you keep talking about the importance of picking a good program.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've enrolled. Let's say you talk about Napa Valley College. We'll use that because it's local. You know, you're obviously very involved with the college there. And let's say I already have a bachelor's degree. Many people with a bachelor's degree go back to a community college. What would be the one piece of advice you would tell me how to make the most of my back-to-school stint at Napa Valley College?
I would find all the resources that are available to me. If you hit a snag, you don't just decide that you're too old, too dumb, too whatever. You go and use the resources that the college provides for you, learning centers, counselors that can help you. You don't need to do it alone. We're all so mm-hmm. hard on ourselves.
I love it.
And one of the biggest reasons for students dropping out of school is that the insecurities mm-hmm. jump to the fore mm-hmm. the minute anything gets hard, particularly because in this crazy world where self-esteem has mm-hmm. been so emphasized mm-hmm. and every kid has been told how fabulous they are and
right.
everybody gets a trophy for everything,
right.
everybody feels like you have to be wonderful, and suddenly this is now hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so the immediate tendency is to pack up your toys and go home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there are all the people who are paid. You talk about all the administrators. There mm-hmm. are all these people who are paid to give you that helping hand that can get you over the hump, that can say, I remember when I was in graduate school, and I was so nervous about my writing skills.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And finally somebody said, well, just go to the writing center and see if they can help you. And we talked for a few minutes, and he said, you know, your writing is fine. You just haven't really thought through what you're trying to write about.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't that you don't know how to write. It's that you're not clear on what it is you want to say. Well, that was enough to get me going. Okay, so first I need to make a whole lot of notes and figure out what I believe about this. Then, once I am clear in my mind, I can write it.
Are you sure we're clear in explaining that? It's great advice.
Thank you.
Would you believe, Barbara, all of our lines are fully lighted up. They immediately just lit up like a Christmas tree.
Lovely. Well, let's talk to these
Let's
folks.
Go right to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Namco and Barbara Namco. What's on your mind? Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hi.
I'm Rachel Mercy Simpson, and I'm co-chair of the multimedia department at Berkeley City College.
Okay. Now, by the way, your multimedia is your a particular piece of media, your radio. Is it turned down because I'm hearing some noise?
Oh, yeah. I turned it off.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. You're a little echoey, but go ahead.
Okay. First of all, thank you. You've been making terrific points. I really appreciate the show.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
I went through your list of issues about why to go back to school or not. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say that a lot depends on the program and how it's structured.
Yep.
And at the community college level, you know, there's this huge emphasis now on vocational, strong workforce funding.
Yeah.
And dealing innovatively with these. And some ways that our department instructs web design, video production and editing, animation, game design, and digital imaging. And we do several things, like adjunct professors work in the industry. We have instructors who work for Lucas, Skywalker,
wow.
Pixar.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been... It's amazing. And they teach our advanced vocational classes. And we have folks from public broadcasting.
Wow.
And our production teacher has shot, you know, things for Apple. And
wow.
So it's really a big issue for our program is actually that there's really no publicity for community
college. You're getting
colleges.
It right now, kiddo.
You are my kind of woman. Those are exactly the programs people should be looking
at. And this is $12 a semester, you know, and you're getting, it's not obsolete like some hidebound professor. You're talking about people working in the industry, so you're not going to be learning Fortran. You're going to be learning Python. You're going to be learning the latest stuff, Ruby.
But there were a few points about things that you were saying, like, I've been with our program for 14 years, and I would say 90% of the students who have really viable, terrific, resilient careers are the ones who have their bachelor's degree combined with the vocational technology. So I think it's really important to emphasize for young people, and actually people up into their 30s, the importance of getting a four-year degree, but at a public university.
Do me a favor. I'm going to interrupt you. You're making a big mistake here. It's a correlation-causation problem. Of course, people with the money and the stick-to-itiveness and the intelligence to get a bachelor's degree are going to be more successful than those that don't. But it doesn't mean that the 4 and 5 and 6 years and all those thousands of dollars was the best use of that money. They were brighter and more motivated to begin with. That's a real dangerous, that's an argument that's been made forever, and it's wrong.
Marty, I have a question about that then, because one of the things that I've seen is that, like, the people who succeed have both strong visual communications, and of course our program emphasizes that, but also,
right.
Like, what we bring to why come in person to school has been a huge issue for us. And there's all this emphasis that we now put on building communication skills, critical feedback. Our students routinely learn how to work on teams and give constructive feedback to each other. And we have advisory boards, and they've said, you know, we have to have team players and people who can communicate.
Yeah.
And so the bachelor's, don't you think bachelor's
offers? No, it offers, but very inefficiently. It's not like they're going to be locked in a hermetically sealed box for the 5 years. People get an opportunity for structured feedback on their communication skills, whether they're in the workplace at McDonald's or they're self-employed, to argue that the amount of feedback that people get on their communication skills and their group process and whatever is greater to justify the time and cost of college is an absurd argument.
You know, I appreciated what you said also, and it was a new idea actually for me, that about that idea of that people just, you have like an hour versus a semester, and we do things like we have rotating guest lecturers and
that's
teachers
great.
Who co-teach mm-hmm. together. But
love it.
I hear what you're saying, but you know, people do have to learn how to like put out a pitch and
of course.
Speak publicly. And so, you know, I'm not sure like, and it's easy to, and you know, for a really strong career, you have to have those communication
right.
skills
I'm gonna stop you
one way
we're
not, or another.
We're getting
you know?
Redundant. But yes,
okay.
I'm just saying you, of course those skills are important, but the percentage of the time that you spend at college doing that is trivial, and the cost and time is enormous. There are other ways to learn how to make a pitch. I would argue that if I take a kid out of high school who's reasonably bright anyway, and those are going to, again, those are kids who are more likely to be able to pitch successfully in a position to pitch, I would tell them to go to angel investor meetings where they'll see 30 or 40 pitches in 2 hours and then imitate them, or watch Shark Tank and see pitches, not sitting in Professor Hassenpfeffer's class paying a fortune. No. Anyway, I loved a lot of your comment, but part of what makes good, I like to think that we've just had a good, respectful, feisty exchange, even though we disagree.
There was one thing that I would recommend for the older students returning.
Great.
That that they take classes credit, no credit. Like, if you're not going to transfer, you know, I'm a big proponent of credit, no credit, because it also keeps the students' emphasis on what they're getting out of their education versus how they're being evaluated.
Love it. Absolutely
great
love
point.
It. On
great
that point,
point.
I'm going to say goodbye to you, but I want Barbara to have a comment. Thanks very much, Nicole. Loved your
Thank
call.
You.
Really do. Okay, Barbara, your thoughts and reactions as you've listened to the exchange between this wonderful caller and me.
Well, I totally agree that she is exactly who you want to talk to if you're going to community college. She is absolutely right on how important community college is. I'm with you on the not everybody needs a four-year degree. I think that's old thinking. But I love her passion, and I think I would love to meet her if I were an older student going back to school.
And I'm telling you, if I were interested in getting a training in the various digital media, and to think that I would get for $12 a semester access to people who work doing that exact work at Lucas and Apple, my butt is signed up at least for a course. You know, I may not stay forever, but I would cherry pick. I would say, I would look at the reviews of the professors in that program. I don't need a whole program worth, maybe. I'm going to find the best damn professor I can who's got great student reviews. I do believe in trusting the consumer to some extent. And I would sign up for that course and then take it a step at a time. It sounds awesome. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. All our lines are still lit up. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
I would just like to express my gratitude and confirm everything you guys have been saying. What Barbara said at the outset about doing your homework is essential. And the component that you really have to address is how much this is going to cost me and how much bandwidth is this going to take up. You know, am I raising kids? You know, am I doing home improvements? And then estimate what it's going to cost financially and attentionally, and then double that.
Love it.
Go ahead and assume that it's going to take so much more time and energy and cost so much more money than your wildest expectations.
Right, because of a couple of examples. We don't, again, colleges are a business. I visited the USC website about a year and a half ago. I could not find what was the full sticker price until I drilled down to about 20 different levels of the website to find out the damn cost of the thing. Now, maybe it's changed in the last year and a half. And then they don't tell you they are like drug dealers. They will give you a relatively generous package the first year. And then in small print, they'll say, unless you have like a 3.5 GPA, your scholarship will be removed. Well, very few students can get a 3.5. So suddenly, now you're at the college, you're hooked like an addict. And now they've taken away your cash loan and cash grant, and now they may give you a loan. And of course, they assume 4 years to graduation when the average is normally 5 or 6. And then they make an allowance for, quote, living expenses that a pauper, a monk couldn't live on. You know, $1,000, $1,500 a year for living expenses, when especially at the private colleges, we want to go on a field trip. Oh, we got to look the right part for the party and all the rest of it. And so just what you say, the amount of actual net out of out-of-pocket costs and loans, which are not dischargeable with bankruptcy, the higher education lobby is so massive, they were able to get the government to give them an exemption on bankruptcy. Student loans, you cannot declare bankruptcy. So, right, you have to really think of them as a business and realize, not a community college, they're a great deal, no question. But except for the community colleges...
I want to add one thing to that to emphasize what you're saying. Do not trust the intake personnel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if there's going to be a clinical training burden, if you're going into mental health or biomedical, mm-hmm. You can't take out student loans to cover internships.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I didn't. Anyway, thank you so much
thank
for the call.
Thank you for adding that, and thank you so much for the nice call.
Yeah, Barbara, any thoughts about the idea of the caveat emptor issue?
No, I just agree.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We have time for one more call, even though all these lines are lighted up here. Let's take one quick call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. You'll need to make it relatively quick.
Hi, am I on the air?
You are.
Yes. I have a BS in civil engineering from Berkeley.
Uh-huh.
I was working for the state of California, but I had reasonable accommodations in the workplace. But then new management came in, and they denied me those accommodations, and they made my work life so miserable. And plus, they put me on a job where I hurt my back. I got put on disability retirement after only 6 1/4 years. And I can't retire on that. The pension is only about $850 a month. So I got to go back to work. But
tell me what kind of accommodation? What are you know?
We're really nasty.
Right. What are your disabilities? So we can hopefully come up with something quickly that might give you a reason, a direction to pursue. What are both your disabilities, the things that required and currently require accommodations, and what are your strengths? What do you bring to the table?
I have perseverance. Whatever I wasn't able to get finished during the work week, my when I first went there, they allowed me to come in on the weekend to finish up my work, and so I could put a 40-hour work week in, and I ended up, I was one of the best people in the office because I was more ahead of my work than anyone else.
Great. How about, I'm interrupting you because of time. We've got to stop. What do you have currently valuable skills in the civil engineering area that might get you hired, given your disabilities, et cetera? You might be well to try another government agency or something like that.
I'm thinking of... maybe getting a master's in chemical engineering because I love chemistry.
Can you afford the time and money?
Go back to school.
Yes. Okay. The question I would ask is the combination of your civil, is your interest in the field enough that you can justify the time and money? And if so, please talk to the potential employer. And Steve, you can amalgamate your civil engineering knowledge with what you learned in working at the state and combine it with chemical and talk to potential employers who would welcome that combination, and then ask them what they think you would be, a degree, or do you need a course, or could they hire you and learn on the job and have them pay? We are out of time. I wanted to give you every last second. We got to stop. Really, my show is over, so I have to. I gave you every second I could. Thanks a lot for calling. Barbara, we got 15, 20 seconds left. Give me a soundbite, last thing you want to say, please. I want you to get a last word.
Do your homework. I don't know what to say beyond that. That is critical. It's all individual. It depends on your life, what you want to do, where you want to do it.
Okay, I know. I hate when I make you do that.
I
but
do.
I know, but I feel like I feel guilty. I'm guilty. A couple guilt-ridden Jew. I feel guilty when I talk too much, and I wanted to give you the last word. Sorry. Anyway, that is Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and joining and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers, and I will talk with Liz Eggleston. She is the co-founder of CourseReport.com. She's going to talk about what high-tech boot camps are really like and for whom they're worth it. And are they worth it more than the freebies? There are these free open school programs that are free. Anyway, until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko for Barbara Nemko, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.